but as a way of furthering its mission. And I think a lot of the shows that they debuted under his watch as podcasts first exemplified that. They are in the NPR style. They are forever going to be...
This is 90.7 FM WGXE Aqua, Hudson Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
Creating opportunities, fighting poverty, changing lives. For almost 50 years, Community Action of Greene County has proudly served our community, providing education, tools, and advocacy for those in need. Services range from emergency services, food pantry, housing and homelessness assistance, and weatherization in Greene County, to domestic violence and Wheels for Work programs in both Greene and Columbia counties. Our Pay It Forward community thrift store generates income to support our programs. For more information, to donate, to volunteer, or if you are in need of services, please visit us at www.cagcny.org or dial 943-9205.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Alex Benson of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Have the latest information from state and federal officials about the COVID-19 coronavirus. The latest is that the Centers for Disease Control has issued a guidance saying older adults should stay at home as much as possible. Governor Cuomo has declared a state of emergency in New York, and Andrew Cuomo says the risks to the general public overall remain low. As of March 7th, there are 76 confirmed cases in New York, including two in Saratoga County. One woman with the illness in Saratoga County has been in contact with a person from Pennsylvania who has tested positive at a conference in Miami, Cuomo said. The governor also said that large gatherings will not be canceled at this point, but that may have to happen in Rockland and Westchester counties. Cuomo also said that, quote, "We are cracking down on price gouging, which continues to be a problem, and I want businesses to be aware that you could lose your license because we are very serious about this," unquote. Complaints about price gouging can be reported at 1-800-697-1220. That's 800-697-1220.
I have officially done a declaration of emergency, which gives us certain powers. We're going to be doing purchasing and hiring more staff, especially to help local housing authorities, local health departments that are very stressed. You know, we've said to the local health departments, you have to do the monitoring on the quarantine, mandatory quarantine. Somebody has to go knock on the door once a day at random intervals. They have to make sure the person is there. Even on the voluntary quarantine, we want electronic checking in. So this is labor intensive. So we need the staffing, we need the purchasing. Under the declaration of emergency, We have a more expedited purchasing and testing protocol, and we're going to be doing that.
Amtrak canceled nonstop Acela train service between Washington, D.C. and New York City due to coronavirus. National reports indicate there have only been slightly over 2,100 tests in the entire United States since officials became aware of the illness. Keep looking at WGXC's newsroom online at WGXC.org and WGXC's Twitter feed for more information and updates on the COVID-19.
David Lee is reporting for the Columbia Paper. Acting State Supreme Court Judge Richard Kowiek has ruled in favor of the High Falls Property Owners Association in the Article 78 proceeding it filed against the village of Philmont. Kowiek found the Philmont Village Board did not properly award a lease for the historic factory building located on Canal Street to the arts organization called Free Columbia. The property owners group was formed in direct response to the lease decision made by the village last summer. The board had agreed to lease the building owned by the village to Free Columbia for rehabilitation as a theater and arts center. Kowiek found that the lease wasn't properly approved after the board failed to consider competing bids. Kowiek said the only remedy was to start the process all over again. Nathaniel Williams of Free Columbia said, and I quote, "While there is an option for the village of Philmont and Free Columbia to craft a new lease, taking into account the objections raised in the lawsuit, we would like to make sure we take into consideration the totality of the High Falls Property Owners Association's concerns as we look to go back to the drawing board," end quote. Williams said village officials have not indicated if they want to move forward with Free Columbia. Chris Reed, a spokesperson for the property owners group, said, and I quote, "I think there are other places in Philmont for Free Columbia," end quote. And though they are not interested in mediation with Free Columbia, Reed said the group would like to meet with the village board about the Canal Street building. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the Centers for Disease Control's exposure assessment in the city of Newburgh has begun. The study will provide new information about PFAS exposure to Newburgh residents, and community participation is key. Residents will be solicited to participate by a regular U.S. mail, phone call, or home visit. Letters have been sent to selected households. Representatives have started calling those households that will return to Newburgh starting on November 10th, visiting the homes of anyone not previously reached by mail or phone. Primary goal of the exposure assessment is to provide information to communities about levels of PFAS in their bodies. The exposure assessments will also measure PFAS in drinking water and measure PFAS in indoor dust. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Caitlin Emma is reporting for Politico. President Donald Trump, March 6, signed the $8.3 billion emergency funding package, thereby sending a flow of cash to federal agencies and states working to combat an increased number of coronavirus cases nationwide. The bill provides a total of $7.7 billion in new discretionary spending and authorizes an additional $490 million in mandatory spending through a Medicare change. The legislation supports vaccine development, research, and equipment stockpiles. Most of the $400 million will be sent to states during the next 30 days. States will each receive at least $4 million apiece. Read the full story at Politico.com. Michaela Singleton reports for News 10 in Albany that environmental activists in Massachusetts are upset about General Electric's plan to scoop PCBs out of the Housatonic River and put the toxic chemicals on the riverside. Tim Gray, director of the Housatonic River Initiative, said, and I quote, "Take it out of the river and dump it on the side of the river. That's what they want to do. It's absurd," end quote. The contaminated river soil would be out of the river, but still remain in Lee, Massachusetts. Gray said, and I quote, "There are three schools in the proximity of this dump. Our property values around here are already dropping.
Realtors have already told us that people have backed out of sales for homes around this neighborhood because they find out about the toxic dump, end quote. But Brian Olson, director of the EPA Superfund program, does not think the landfill will be a problem. Olson said, and I quote, "We are more concerned about their exposure to the river itself right now and the floodplains and the people living in the floodplain than we are with the landfill itself. We feel that the landfill can be absolutely safe because we will completely eliminate exposure," end quote. Read more about this story at the News 10 website. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting that Hudson Valley Film Commission director Laurent Reggio said March 4th that so many movies are filmed in the Hudson Valley because the area can stand in for many other places and because there are many film workers available for hire. Reggio said, and I quote, "You can almost cheat anything here, so that makes it an ideal place. The other thing that makes the Hudson Valley really special in terms of making movies is the appreciation in the area for creativity and the mix that that has with labor," end quote. Over 500 movies, TV shows, and other productions have been filmed in the Hudson Valley since 2000. Most of those projects received a 30% tax reduction of below-line cost and 10% reduction of below-line labor cost to lure them to the area. Movies coming out soon filmed in the Hudson Valley include Things Heard and Seen from Netflix, Silent Retreat from Miramax, and an HBO miniseries, I Know This Much Is True, starring Mark Ruffalo. Read more about this story at the Mid-Hudson News website.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a mostly sunny Sunday with a high near 53 and a low around 35. Monday should also be mostly sunny with a high near 63, a low around 43 Monday night. Tuesday, showers are likely. There's a 60% chance of rain, mainly between 1 and 4 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be cloudy with a high of 56 and a low around 36. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill Hudson, radio for open ears.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Sunday, March 8th, Nellie McKay, Theater World Award winner and featured performer and composer of Ethan Coen's A Play is a Poem, will be at Club Helsinki Hudson at 8 p.m. Reserved seating tickets are recommended. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. To add your own event and hear it right here on the radio, visit WGXC.org/calendar.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am a student of NC Smith, and I am also from Hudson.
Hi, I'm AJ. I go to school at Libri, which is a couple minutes away from Hudson. And now I live in Elizabeth, but I used to live in Manhattan, which viewers or listeners, I always get those confused, might have remembered from the previous times.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All that good
stuff. And finally, I actually brought a book with me because I know that you guys can't see it, but I finally remembered to bring one because it helped me remember.
Sometimes we have the books with us and sometimes we just remember to talk about them. But what we don't want to forget to talk about today before we talk about books is the
Pledge Drive.
The Pledge Drive.
It's the Yay. WGXE Tower of Babel Winter 2020 Pledge Drive.
Woo. Well, basically our goal is to add 30 more sustaining monthly supporters.
Do you know what a monthly sustaining supporter is?
No. Yes.
A person who sustainably supports monthly.
Well, yes, but basically a sustaining supporter, you would donate a certain amount each month, a dollar, $10, maybe $100. I don't know, that would be pretty cool.
$1,000.
Going once, going twice, $1,000
sold. That is
what
our monthly sustaining supporter would be. You can become one by calling our pledge drive number, 518-697-7400, or you could go online at wgxc.org/donate.
We hope listeners out there will call in or go online and pledge your support. We can also accept one-time donations. You don't have to become a monthly sustaining supporter, but we do know that those are very helpful because we can rely on that funding month to month and help us pay all the bills that help keep WGXC on the air.
And so that you can keep hearing us talking about books or any other programs you like, talking about whatever they talk about.
Yeah, and maybe a program that we want to bring back to life where we talk about gaming.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. My friend used to be on that. Basically, so it helps us pay for everything that we need to keep broadcasting. That's what it helps with.
If you're a monthly supporter, you know that you don't have to just give the same amount of money each month. You can change it.
You could give less or give more depending on your situation. You could always change the amount you give.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True, true.
And so that's pretty much it.
I was like telling the example of one of my Bound by Books cohorts back in the day who did not have a job because she was too young to have a job. So didn't really have a big source of income. Just emptied out her pockets of all of her change that she had. And she donated like $5 to the station.
Hmm.
And that was very nice. So she gave what she could give.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, at least
every
she
amount
that she
does.
Had
we don't want you to break the bank.
Oh, of course not.
At least she knew that she had at least $5 in change. And yeah. She keep on collecting change.
I think that's more change than I have. I usually just throw it in the bag and walk out because I'm scared of dropping it when they give me the change.
But yeah, so give a call, 518-697-7400, or go online to wgxc.org to make your donation. Mm-hmm. And you can check out the website while you're there.
Yeah,
it's pretty
great. We have all our old episodes archived on there, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Wait, really?
So if you missed a show or you just want to, this is the first time you're hearing us and you want to hear a non-Pledge Drive show where we just talk about books, although sometimes we talk about other things too, but mostly books. But you can listen to all these past shows.
Mm-hmm. It's a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
So speaking of talking about books, I think you guys have books to talk about. I have poetry to talk about because I'm still going slow at reading.
would like to start
one
us
of
off.
Those years.
I guess me Lena because AJ was like
you've been nominated.
Yay! You have been nominated. Okay, so
you've been chosen. You've been sacrificed.
Yeah, I have been sacrificed.
But you always shares first. So
my book that I'm going to be talking about is New Kid by Jerry Craft.
Yay!
I think you've talked about this before.
I love that book.
Would love to hear Lena talk about it and share her opinion.
And Jerry Craft comes to the Book Fest just about every year. I think every year that I've been here.
Yay!
And he'll be here this year.
Oh,
which I guess
sorry.
A long time.
I know you want to talk about the book, and we just keep talking about it. But
I'm so sorry.
Go wild, Lena.
Go, Lena.
It's about a seventh grader named Jordan who goes to this, like, fancy, prestigious school that his parents want him to go to, even though he wants to go to like an art school because he loves drawing, just like me.
Yay. And just like Jerry Craft.
Yeah.
Just like me too.
This is a graphic novel. I don't know if we mentioned that.
Oh yeah, sorry. We didn't mention that. Oh, whoops. So it's like about how he goes to school and he meets like these kids who are like very nice. And he signs up for like, I don't know how to explain this at all.
Read the back.
Maybe. Have you have you read all of it yet?
I have read it before, but like, yeah. Yeah, I've read all of it, but I just like rereading books. And so I can't read the back because they do that all the time.
What? Oh my god.
I would never do that to you.
People at the school library, it has a great selection of books, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But they always put their little barcode or their little Hudson ID thing right over like the center of the description. Let me see. Maybe I can decipher it. I've had skills.
An exact reading from it says, seventh grader Jordan loves nothing more than D cartoons drawing. About his life.
Yeah. Drawing cartoons.
I believe hold on. Let's see.
Okay.
Let's see if my expertise of spending a lifetime in a school that does this to all their books can allow me to decipher this back cover. Okay, seventh grader Jordan. Oh, look at that.
I crossed a line. Wow.
Okay, Emily, go. Thank you.
Thank you.
A graphic novel about starting over at a new school where diversity is low and the struggle to fit in is real. Seventh grader Jordan Banks loves nothing more than drawing cartoons about his life, but instead of sending them to the art school of his dreams, his parents enroll him in a prestigious private school known for its academics, where Jordan is one of the few kids of color in his entire grade. As he makes the daily trip from his Washington Heights apartment to the upscale Riverdale Academy Day School, Jordan soon finds himself torn between two worlds and not really fitting into either one. Can Jordan learn to navigate his new school culture while keeping his neighborhood friends and staying true to himself? That is the most concise and clear and non-stuttery way I've ever read the back of a book. Oh my god.
Excellent.
Yeah. I'm so proud of myself.
Okay, but so really thank good. You to Amelia and Emily. Me over here pointing at Emily.
I'm sitting here trying to decipher the fragments of words, and Emily just like pulls up and is like, hey, I found it.
Yeah, one fun fact about this book is that it won this year's Newbery Medal for Jerry Craft, and it is the first author of a graphic novel to win that award.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it when graphic novels win things.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty good.
It's lovely. Sorry. It was one of my favorite books I read last year.
So when I went to go grab it, like, it was in the very front, and a girl who really wanted the book just passed it. And, like, I picked it up, and it had a star that said, won the Newbery Award. And I'm like, oh, yay! And then, like, when I get back, my friend who didn't grab a book, she was like, we're just talking about that book. And I was like, oh, yay. And, like, instead of, like, a dead tone, she was like, we're just talking about the book. That's just so funny.
I've had instances of competition for a book in the library break out before my school. I believe there were three. There was the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark trilogy. There was Welcome to Dark House, which everyone got. And then before Welcome to Dark House, I believe The Truth was a really big deal. And I ended up reading The Truth, like, a year after. It was such a big deal in my school. But yeah, we've had feuds break out over who was going to borrow a book next in our grade. It was quite entertaining.
Oh. Wee. Well, I'm over here like, I'll return it next week and you can take it.
Did you use that funny voice?
No. And then
that's
girl's
how she
like,
talks at school.
Okay.
Borrowing books from school libraries is an experience that I don't think I will ever relive, because I remember reading the 10th and final book in Bone and realizing that I had not read any of the previous nine. So I read the 10th and final one and was content with the 10th and final
don't
one for a really long time until I finally bought the full series, not in color, unfortunately. They lied to me. Mm. And I got to read it all. And I understood the story quite a bit better. The 10th one always still has a special spot in my heart as where I started.
Where it all began.
Where it all began.
The rest was all a flashback.
At the ending.
Wait.
I'm reading book 8 right now.
How did they lie to you?
Well, the big collection was in plastic wrap at Barnes & Noble, so I could not open it, and I bought it assuming it was in color, and it was not.
Oh, I was usually very when you buy upset it when as individual it. Volumes, it's in color.
Yes.
So I, too, got the black and white version and assumed it would be in color, and then I opened it, and I was like, I'm not reading this. I want the color
It
version.
Has bamboozled many a comic book fan. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm usually like that black one person. I'm usually that one person who takes a book and goes to the store employee or goes to someone who looks like a store employee. And I'm like, Mister, do you know if this is in color? And then either they're like, no, or like, yes, or they're like, I don't work here.
Well, you see,
what do I look like? Just open the book.
They're like, what do I look like? A store employee? And in my mind, I'm like, yes.
In some stores, you can look like the employee. In Hot Topic, if you're wearing Hot Topic clothing, you look like an employee, unless you're me and you're 5'2" and look like a child. But I've actually had the authority to wield that cool hook thing that they use to get clothing and high things off the shelves because the store was almost empty and it was just me and my friends. And it's the most power that I've ever had in my life.
And the Target, and the Target when you're wearing red, everyone who's wearing red there looks like a Target employee, even if they're super small. Target means red, so red must be an employee. And how am I supposed to know who they are?
Don't wear your khaki and red shirts to Target.
Let's
move on to AJ's book that she brought AJ. With her that also has a little shiny medal on it. Although it's an honor book, it looks like, not the medal winner.
It is an honor book. It's called The Black Pearl by Scott O'Dell. Ramon could not believe what he had just found in an oyster he's brought up from an underwater cave where the Manta Diablos of monster devilfish lurks. Ramon is holding a pearl, not just any pearl, but the most fabulous gem he or anyone else has ever seen. But neither Ramon nor his father can foresee the trouble that such a pearl can bring.
No.
I love cursed gem stories.
Cursed gems.
Have any of you guys ever heard of the Hope Diamond? I saw it in the Smithsonian, and it is known for being a cursed gem. Is this a nonfiction or fiction or?
It's a fiction story.
Fiction, okay.
And I literally just finished reading it today, and it is a cursed gem.
Nice.
And everyone makes up what they think that the Manta Diablo is because only two people have seen it, him and a person who had already died. But he is telling the story, and he is the only person besides the person who died who has seen it. And everyone's making up their version, but he's like, that's all wrong. And then the way that he describes it, it sounds just way better than the fake ways that everyone else was saying it. Like, the way that he described it.
Can you tell us one fake way? Or does it not tell you?
It does. Let's see.
Technically, this isn't a spoiler to the book, right?
I think
it's not. It's only like a
urban
little
legend
bit of it.
Versions of it.
Yeah, it says, well, this is a part of him. It's like his mom was telling him, quote, she told me that he was larger than the largest ship in the harbor of La Paz. His eyes were the color of ambergris and shaped like a sickle moon, and there were seven of them. He had seven rows of teeth in his mouth, each tooth as long as my father's Toledo knife. With these teeth, he could snap my bones like sticks. Mothers of my friends also threatened them with the Manta Diablo. He was a somewhat different monster from the one my mother knew, for he had more teeth or less, or eyes shaped in a different way, or only a single eye instead of seven.
The concept of things, and I know sharks exist, but things with multiple rows of teeth has always deeply disturbed me, and I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because I have the thing about teeth, or I just don't like teeth as they are.
It's like
but
a shark.
The concept of having more than you strictly need is very upsetting to me.
It's like, what? Did you get fake teeth, or are those all
but
real?
It's like the kind of the same concept with wisdom teeth, though. It's like your body's just like, hey, would you like more teeth? And you're like, no, I don't have any room for more teeth. But your body's like, well, I'm going to give you more
Too
teeth.
Too bad.
You're going to get more teeth, and I don't like it at all.
Well, that's actually kind of like where old people get the advantage because they always keep losing their teeth, so they almost end up with
Not
the same amount of teeth.
Not all elderly people end up losing their teeth,
most.
But the concept of having, like, a pair of, like, dentures that will not, like, really rot, I'm not going to say it's appealing to me because I like having my teeth, but it's slightly less disconcerting than having teeth in your mouth. This is such a weird conversation. It's just me desperately trying to ramble and explain why I fear teeth. So, I do not have a book.
But
shame on me. But we have started our poetry unit in creative writing, which everyone is upset about, including me, because I was going to write a sequel to a short story that I had written right before the poetry unit started. But I'm getting the hang of it. We've started writing haikus, and there is this website we found, which is a haiku generator. And frankly, it is extremely funny if you just put the same word in it over and over. But we didn't do that. We put normal words in it. And it still came out really funny sometimes. But I don't have my haiku. I have the poem, the first poem we've written for like a grade in the class to be peer edited as we do. Would you like to read it?
Oh, you want me to read it?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Dear Eve, how did the fruit taste? Was it sweet enough to justify being cast out of paradise? Did the juice run over your lips the way Abel's blood ran out from his head, drawn from his skull by his own brother's hand? Was that serpent so persuasive, his honeyed venom sweetening the lies that led you to doom Eden? And lastly, did you think it was so wrong to desire the knowledge of God? I do not fault you. No one could resist that fruit. If he didn't wish for you to taste it, he should have placed it out of your reach. I think we have come to realize that neither you nor the serpent was at fault. God was the true temptress in your story.
Did you write this?
Yes, I did.
Very, very, very good.
Thank you.
Thought you took it from a book.
The teacher said that she enjoyed the biblical references in it, and I said, cool, that was the entire poem, was a biblical reference.
Yeah.
My friend said I should rewrite the whole Bible in poetry, and I said, no, that's too long and boring. There are entire pages where they just list names for pages upon pages upon pages, and I'm not about to do that. Also, I think the Psalms are all poems, if I remember right. I think that is what the Book of Psalms basically is. I'm not sure, because I skipped through all of those things when I had to read them for confirmation class, and I didn't understand a lot of things.
For the poem, did you get to write on whatever you wanted?
Yes, it's weird, because since it is technically a college class in high school, we are given pretty much free reign to do what we want, and that was including our last unit, which was comp and lit. We were given pretty much free reign to analyze whatever element of a story we wanted, which was weird, because I was so used to being told you have to analyze a symbol, or you have to analyze a theme, or you have to analyze how this theme, the specific theme, is played out. So when she said pretty much write about any theme and how the author like portrays it, but you can write about any theme you want, especially with The Handmaid's Tale, where there are so many themes to choose from, I was like, oh, what do I do with all this freedom? And it's the same thing with creative writing, where I'm used to being given a very specific prompt, and we are still given prompts, but we can go pretty far with it and have it still be the prompt and have it still be acceptable work. And she never censors us, which makes it interesting, but it makes it interesting, but it is also, I kind of appreciate, because you gave us all these dark books to read in comp and lit. Did you think we weren't going to write dark stuff when you gave us a creative writing class? You condition us to be this way, and we've told her that, like, as a joke. She says she hasn't, but I think she has. But yeah, it's basically that kind of thing. And we are, basically, when we're told to write a microfiction or a poem, she's like, write about whatever you want, as long as, you know, it qualifies as a microfiction or a poem.
Cool.
So we're given very free rein in it. Comes up with all sorts of diverse like work in our class.
Awesome. I have a book I can talk about. So this weekend I read Mercy Suarez Changes Gears by Meg Medina, who I know that Amelia has read
Meg
before.
Medina.
And this is a middle grade book. It's about a sixth grader named Mercy Suarez who goes to a private school. She and her brother are scholarship students there, so sometimes don't fit the higher class level of many of their classmates. But sixth grade is turning out to be even more challenging when she gets paired up with a young man who's new to school named Michael Park, and she is his sunshine buddy, which means she's supposed to like be his friend as he's getting settled into school. And she gets along well with him, but unfortunately one of the other girls in school, Edna Santos, has set her sight on him. And all of a sudden in sixth grade, they're like, I want to be his girlfriend. Like, he likes me. He doesn't like you. And it gets kind of a little catty. So that creates some tension. Not the good kind of cat.
It's not my cat. My cat is the best kind of cat.
So that adds some tension in school. And there's some unfortunate events and some bullying that happens. And then there's also some changes going on at home. She lives with her grandparents and her parents and her brother. And her grandfather, who she's been very close with, is starting to act strangely and forget things and have some struggles. And nobody is really willing or able to talk with her or considering talking with her about what's going on with him. And so she's feeling some loss in that relationship as well and some worries. So I kind of liked that it had a mix of school life and home life in a nice balanced way that was pretty relatable, even if I haven't had the exact same experiences as her.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like they often don't talk about kind of relationships with grandparents in a lot
like
of middle
grade
fiction.
Seems like Meg Medina's work tends to have a theme of a balance between like work and school, mm-hmm. or home and school life.
Yeah.
I'm actually happy that it has, like, something going on with, like, home and school because, like, a girl is being really rude to me and she says, give me your pencil, and it's just so she can erase something. And I'm like, no. And she said to me, this is why no one likes you. And I'm like, I can list plenty of people who like me. Emily, Amelia, AJ, my mom, my dad, my sister, my brother, Keely, Juliana, Nevaeh. Oh, that's 10 people.
Like
it's
idea.
At least more than
your
people
like
who
like
you.
I just like the idea of like, that she just takes your pencil and erases something.
Yeah. And
you see, this is why I have too many writing utensils, because if someone asks me for something, I have to be ready. I'm always scared that they're going to think my pen is too nice and they're going to take it. And it's not because that's something I've done before, but you know.
You should get a little chain to connect you to
your
pen.
It would be karma if it did happen, because I have done that before. I have taken people's pens because I thought they were nice. And if they forget to take it, I'm like, well, I guess this is mine now, this nice. If it writes smooth, you know, smooth writing pens are hard to come by sometimes. If you find that perfect pen, I don't even want to use it sometimes because it writes so smoothly. I don't want it to run out. I'm like, oh, it's so nice.
Who knew office and classroom supplies could cause such scandal?
Forever, like in a plastic bag.
Like in a plastic bag, I'm just like, this pen has the best.
Are you gonna freeze it?
Yes, I freeze it and I keep it as a specimen until I can like find more. So basically what I do with my G2 pens. I have to make sure I get the right ones. I always keep one out of the package, and I have to go to the, like, Staples, and I'm like, okay, it looks like this. It has this certain amount of ink in it. Ah, there's the package, and then I can, like, I can keep it consistent. This is what being an AP student is like, and it's awful, but yes, I've become addicted to G2 pens.
This is why I've trained myself to have really strong grip, because, one, I want to go rock climbing. The safe kind.
With your pens?
No. No,
they
not
probably
with
put the
my
pens
pen.
Down.
Not with my
I just
pens.
Like the mental image of you climbing up the rock, sticking the pens into the rock like ice picks. That was a very funny image.
I was picturing her just using her feet to get up.
When the
and
pens,
like holding the pens.
When the pens are that strong.
No. Like, Lena, drop the pens.
No,
hold
like,
on.
Like, I trained myself to have really strong grip because, one, I want to go rock climbing without pens.
Without pens.
And two, it's because she steals everyone's pencils.
I used to have a friend like that who would not give back my stuff, and I had to, like, fight her for it. Not physically fight her, but I did have to, like basically arm wrestle my writing utensils out of her grip. It was not fun.
Oh, no.
But you find that most people grow out of that behavior once they get into high school, and I'm so thankful for it, but I still get freaked out when someone goes to take a pencil or pen, because I'm like, you're going to give that back, right? I'm not going to have to fight you for it, right?
And also, she has millions of pens and pencils, and then she asked me, and I'm over here in my mind, like, you have millions
like
of pens and pencils, so you need to back off, or else
write, like,
I will fight you.
You should write, like, a story.
I have trained.
It's the war of the pens.
You've trained.
I have trained to fight my...
I'll write all over your face.
I'm imagining, like,
no
you
fighting
know,
in school.
I have trained to, like, fight Nevaeh because she takes my food, and the food is the most precious thing.
All I'm hearing is my own experience in school when I was your age, because I did have friends who would take my food.
Middle
and
school
pencils.
Is rough.
This is weird, and I don't appreciate these flashbacks.
And also,
but all I can imagine is like Duel of the Fates. I think that's that name of that Star Wars soundtrack, and just like Minutes of Lightsabers. It's just pens, and it's very, very amusing.
All right. Well, yeah. We're just about out of time.
Oh, no.
But we want to remind our listeners that it is the Winter 2020 Tower of Babel on-air pledge drive.
Tower of Babel?
Yes. All these biblical references.
Everyone do this. Some research
That's
while
what it
you're
is today.
about
That's
the Tower
theme.
Of Babel. That's your assignment for this week, Bound by Books co-hosts. But we're in the pledge drive. We're doing our part to help WGXC raise the funds needed to stay on the air. Every bit counts. We have a special goal for this pledge drive.
Yes, that goal is to add 30 more sustaining monthly supporters.
We love sustaining supporters.
We very much appreciate it.
Dear listener, would you become a sustaining supporter?
Maybe
you already are. In which
My
case,
mom
thank
would
you.
Definitely be.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
She like
to
like,
become.
Come
a,
on, remember your radio was on today. But
to become a monthly sustaining supporter, you can call 518-697-697. Yes, 518-697-7400, or you can go online at wgxc.org/donate. Any amount helps. You can adjust your amount depending on your situation if you would like to. You can also make one-time donations, as those also help if you're able to.
Yes.
Every amount helps, but we are aiming for sustaining monthly supporters.
And it's so easy to set up.
Everything is
Or at least I found it easy to set up.
Yes.
But we can also have people help you if you give a call in. But what I like about being a sustaining supporter is that I don't have to think to myself, did I give to WGXC recently?
Oh, yes, I believe like, it track is all back. Automatic.
It's all,
right?
It can be all automated so that it just comes right out of your bank account or off your credit card each
it's
month.
Very convenient.
Very easy.
So if you like hearing our show or if you like any other shows on WGXC,
you, know
you
do.
Should donate or become a sustaining supporter to keep us on the air and help us pay all the stuff that we need to pay to continue broadcasting.
So call 518-697-7400 or go online at wgxc.org/donate.
Yay!
Thank you
Wait,
to all the supporters for your support.
I have something that I've been longing to say ever since the beginning. Oryx stands for organization, so we will be happy if you have a donation.
True.
Yeah.
But we also hope everyone has a great week filled with quality reading time.
Yay!
Bye!
Bye.
Which brings me to this appropriate moment to discuss an ongoing effort here at WGXC. You know, what we want to do is eventually have monthly dedicated support of $5,000 made up of many sustaining supporters who make contributions, which at this point average around $14 a month. If we could get to that $5,000 a month number, we would have very few pledge drives in the future. And pledge drives, well, I don't mind them that much, but they can be a little dispiriting. And, you know, in some of the early days, we were downright desperate as we fought to stay alive as a radio station. Well, we're near number 9, so I think we're here for good. But it doesn't happen on its own. It needs your constant support. You can't just say, oh, hey, I helped it in those early years. I gave some money back then. Yeah, you did probably, but it doesn't work like that. You got to continue. You got to become what we call a sustaining supporter. How do you do that? Well, it's pretty easy. Go to wgxc.org, hit the donate button, excuse me, and it'll set you up to make your monthly contribution. It's easy. Comes out of your credit card. You barely know it's there, unless, of course, you have a little money left on your credit card, which happens. But, you know, they'll check in with you, make sure you still want to do it. And then you don't have to worry. During a pledge drive, you can say to yourself, ha, I've already given to WGXC. Ha! They're not talking to me in this pledge drive. They're talking to all those other freeloaders who haven't given any money recently. And that's the nature of the game. You can be an ardent listener and still be a freeloader, which is, you know, that's up to you and your own moral compass. But really, if you're listening to this show, if you're listening to any show on the station, you should feel at least a slight impulse to contribute in some fashion to this station. And you know, there's no telling who you'll hear next over the airwaves here at WGXC. We're constantly adding new shows. We're constantly soliciting people to create new shows to fill in the daily slots of the morning show and the afternoon show. This is one of the slots of the afternoon show. There are a couple up for grabs right now since people are moving on and all kinds of things happen. And everybody gets a chance here. I mean, it's not hard to get on the air here. The rules aren't too difficult. The skills are pretty simple. And the next thing you know, you can have a show.
All right, we are now speaking with Common Council President, Hudson Common Council President Thomas DiPietro, and you have a preview of next week's Hudson Common Council meeting, which is on Tuesday at 7?
Nope. The informal meeting is always on the second Monday.
Second Monday, okay.
So the formal is on the second, I mean on the third Tuesday. So in this month, that is March 9th, next Monday, is the informal, and the formal is on Tuesday, the 17th.
The following.
For those unfamiliar, what happens is the informal is really, in essence, the working session. Resolutions are introduced but not voted on. And then on the second, you know, gives us time to talk about it, to think it over for a week, and then the following week we actually vote.
And as a member of the public, which week is more important to show up and have your say?
If you're concerned about a specific resolution, it's more important to come to the informal because that's when we talk about them at length. By the time it gets to the formal, there is no real public discussion of the resolutions at hand. So, I mean, you can still talk about other things. There's always room to talk about other things at the end of the meeting. I want to say that wrapping up from last month, you know, we voted on the moratorium on short-term rentals, and after the mayor had his public hearing on the 2nd, this Monday, he immediately signed the bill. So that is now in effect, the six-month moratorium on any new short-term rentals.
So that started March 2nd? Or
I guess 2nd or 3rd, I guess, the day after perhaps. I'm not sure exactly what date, but yeah, it's in effect now. And for those who aren't familiar with it, it means that just for the time we're trying to take to craft a comprehensive short-term rental regulation and law, no new short-term rentals can be established. I mean, there are certain, if you have a hardship, you know, it can be addressed. But other than that, there'll be no new short-term rentals for the next 6 months. Or it could actually end earlier if the legislation's ready sooner. And John Rosenthal, who's spearheading that and chair of the legal committee, is working hard on that. And if you're interested, by the way, in this topic, the next legal committee is March 25th at 6:15 p.m., and that's where we will continue the discussion of what the legislation should actually be. You know, there's been a lot of public comment. There's been a first draft of the law, which is on the city website, and we hope to have a second draft probably by the 25th, if not sooner. I shouldn't say that. I mean, I hope that's the case. And then we could start really getting to the final elements of what's at hand. We've also, and sort of in coordination with the new legislation, we had a presentation from a group called Host Compliance. And they're a Seattle-based company that pretty much does all the work for you in making sure that everybody's complying with a regulation. And they do that by surveying the apparently 88 websites where people post their short-term rentals advertisements. And then they do a lot of the other work in terms of making sure that everybody is compliant and registered. And I might add that if you aren't registered and you do post for a short-term rental, the penalties are pretty severe. So it's worth being registered.
And you aren't inventing the wheel here. Hillsdale, Jewett, Woodstock, many other Hudson Valley communities have these sort of laws. Are you looking at those?
We're looking at everything and way beyond, too. I mean, the most radical law was in Jersey City a couple months ago, where they pretty much just banned all of them because things were getting totally out of control in Jersey City. But, yeah, we're looking at all of the municipalities. We're not trying to be a leader in this because, as you know, there's a lot of counter activity by the short-term rental, I guess you'd call it industry, but the short-term rental lobbyists. So, you know, you got to be – you can't – it's tough to make new law that no one else has done, but it's easy to follow tested law from other municipalities.
All right. What other new laws are you talking about making at this Hudson Informal?
Well, the other big thing is something that we lightly revised, and it's been voted on, and that is the – I'm sorry, it's been introduced – and that is the change in the lodging tax allocation. Up until now, a significant portion of the lodging tax that's collected for short-term rentals went to a tourism board by law, by statute. We're trying to change that, so it just goes to the general fund like any other revenue. And, you know, then if the tourism board has a proposal, they can bring it to the council and ask for money. And it could be part of the budget in the future even. As it is, the tourism board has roughly $450,000 that has already been allocated, and that we can't really touch. But we have a new tourism board. It's only its second year. So, you know, it's the first year was rough. I don't think they had a sense of what their mandate really was. But the new board looks good. They're ready to roll, and I think they'll start – coming up with proposals their next meeting, which is, I believe, on the 20th. And by the way, I should mention, all the city meetings are listed on the city website, which has become a better and better place to see what's going on in the city. In fact, one of the first articles on the front now talks about our own, and by our, I mean you and me, Tom, our own collaboration, thanks to what I was looking for, between WGXC and the city, where we have embedded a stream on the city website. If you go to the meeting schedule, you can see a meeting, and in all likelihood, if you press on the listen to council meeting, you will hear that meeting live on the dedicated web stream provided by WGXC, proving once again that WGXC is truly community radio.
And this week there is a HCDPA meeting at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday the 10th.
On Tuesday the 10th, and then there's the IDA. And the IDA is really gearing up. They have a major project in front of them. There's a proposed hotel restaurant on the corner of Union and 7th. No, 6th? 6th or 7th? I can't. Oh, 7th. Union and 7th. It's the old... used to be an old age home, and they're looking for a pilot, and the pilot goes before the IDA. And there's a lot of questions, you know, when you ask for a pilot. A pilot is a payment in lieu of taxes, and it's a way to kind of delay how much you pay. You don't pay your full property taxes the moment you take over the property. You get a sort of deferred way of paying your taxes until at some point you do come to the full assessed value. And it's a way, you know, to give the business or whatever a opportunity to develop. But the key to it is there's a lot of requirements. For example, you have to show that you're employed. I mean, the IDA sets up the requirements, and those include, say, a specified amount of jobs you need to provide. And in this case, they're promising 30 full-time jobs, and that's a lot. You know, bringing 30 jobs to Hudson is significant. Unfortunately, I wish we had places to house all those 30.
I was going
to
make that joke. Then there's a planning board meeting at 6 that says it has a public hearing with it, too?
It's been an ongoing public hearing. There are two things. One, again, the same project, because the planning board has, you know, it's a change of use, so the planning board has to prove a couple things about it. And at the last planning board, they made their initial, the group, the real estate group made their initial presentation, and there were questions about parking. There were questions about traffic on that corner. I think the traffic issue will be solved. I noticed the other day driving by, there was a counter there that I think measured the traffic, if it, you know, how that would affect traffic, what kind of traffic goes on there. So the other issue, the parking issue, I want to make something very clear. A year or so ago, John Rosenthal and I worked towards changing our code requirement, which was an old-fashioned suburban requirement that had a regulation about how many parking spaces you needed for every room, for every chair, for every table in a restaurant. Well, we got rid of all those regulations. But the key here is it doesn't mean you automatically get a pass on having to satisfy parking. The planning board can still demand that you find enough parking, because you don't want to suddenly have all off-street parking for a 50-room hotel. So that's still in their purview. They can say, you know, you got to come up with some parking because this isn't going to work. The other thing is it shifts the burden to the owner of the property, because if they can't have their customers park somewhere, and you know, that's going to hurt their business. So it's in their interest to make sure they have the parking issue covered.
What planning board issue are you talking about?
The same hotel on
the hotel as before, because website says it's also looking at the Colarusso.
That's what I was just going to mention.
Yeah, okay.
The Colarusso saga continues. What are we now? In year one?
Year 2020.
Yeah, I think it's 4 years now, and the public comment. I guess the public hearing is ongoing. I think they don't close it, partly because once they close it, there's a certain obligation to act. And, you know, it's still clouded in confusion for a lot of people. And if you're interested, you should probably make that planning board on the 10th. No, it's on the...
It's March 10th at 6 p.m., it says on the
March
website.
March 10th at 6 p.m.
And it's at the firehouse, not at the...
You're jumping ahead of me, Tom. You're right on target. It's at the firehouse, also on 7th Street, on North 7th Street. Because these are well-attended events.
And also at the same time, there's a Housing and Transportation Committee back at City Hall.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed in that. The chair moved it. It was supposed to be the other night. That is to say, let's see, it was supposed to be Wednesday night, but was canceled.
Oh, right, I see it. It says it was canceled, yes, on Wednesday,
yeah,
yes.
And
so it's been moved to this coming Tuesday.
To Tuesday, not realizing that I, for one, want to be... I'd like
at
to
both places,
both.
Yeah. So
partly because, just to mention, you know, I talk about this live stream, but yours truly is the person who gets out every meeting and sets up the stream. So, you know, I can't be two places in once.
And then there's a Hudson Housing Authority meeting at 6 p.m. on Wednesday the 11th, and a Historic Preservation Commission meeting on Friday at 10 a.m.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting Historic Preservation Committee, because I think they're talking about a really interesting landmark proposal. Two citizens, Matt McGee and Ron Kupnicki, came forth with a proposal to landmark the original Shiloh Baptist Church on Columbia. I think it's 241 or something like that, Columbia, or 221. And it's a historically interesting building. It's got deep roots in the African-American community of Hudson. And it's architecturally interesting in a sort of in the plain style of chapels or churches, and I think they're also trying to show that preservation isn't just about the fancy houses of the rich. This has a lot of cultural significance, and it would be a real coup for them to get this landmark.
And what would it mean? It would mean you couldn't do something to the building? Or?
Right. Well, first thing, you certainly couldn't demolish it. But even when you restore it, you have to then go before the preservation committee to get your restoration approved by the committee. So it does put some burdens on the owner. But from what I understand, at the last meeting, the owner was very amenable to what they were asking. So we'll see how that evolves. So there's always a full load of meetings. Go to the City of Hudson .org website, and you see all the dates, and you click on the date, and you can see if there's a meeting. And if there's a meeting, you go up to that other link, and you can listen to it live, courtesy of WGXC.
And did we skip anything else from the informal meeting this Monday at 7 p.m.?
There's some new things. Not so much on the agenda, but I'll tell you, it's a couple long-term projects, Tom. We're looking at a solar farm possibility, which would be phenomenal because it would involve not just cutting our expenses, but even maybe providing some revenue. And, you know, in the scheme of local municipalities, finding revenue is, and cutting costs and finding revenue are like the mantra.
And Governor Cuomo has just recently put this proposal through to speed these solar farm projects through.